I've been looking at this, and I mean, every box, it looks like they stopped making it in like 1986.
Yeah, it's been a while. We had that game growing up, though, dude. It's so fun.
And just looking at the game setup, it looks like, I don't know, an old parlor game from the 1800s. It's pretty awesome.
Telling you. Get a Mastermind. Sit down, play some Mastermind with your friends.
I feel like this is one where the kids would see it and just like start gobbling up the pieces.
Yeah, I'm sure I probably chewed on the edge some of them. But...
Oh, look at these Skittles. Were you ever good at knowing like constellations or stargazing or anything like that?
I think there was a period of about probably a year and a half, 2 years when I was a third or fourth grader where I was super into it.
I feel like that's where like a lot of people fall off.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's probably about it. But I could rattle them off. I still am okay. I mean, if I see like, I don't know, if John Q. Public walking down the street looks up and sees Cassiopeia, if he's going to know what he's looking at. But I can pick Cassiopeia out. I can pick some of them
out. Yeah, I feel like that's better than the common population. There was one point several years ago where I was like, all right, I'm going to get back into constellations. And I have forgotten everything again. That and trees, where I'm like, what kind of tree is that? I should learn what kind of tree that is.
Dude, same. Every time I'm talking to somebody about trees, they're like, oh, yeah, that... Well, I don't know, whatever. Ash over there has got the F4 beetle or whatever. I'm just like, which one?
Like, well, clearly it's that one. But is it, brother? Like six trees right there. Yeah.
I think the constellations are probably easier to see when the sky's not super clear. I don't know why I just thought of this, but I would tell you why too, because I would think that to draw their constellations, they're picking out the brightest stars. So... On a not so clear night, those are the ones that are actually going to pop. If like you're in a place where it was super clear, you'd see every star. You wouldn't be able to pick them out, I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it makes me want to go sit in my mosquito-filled backyard and look up at the sky tonight.
Get a net, bro. I went kayaking one time, forgot a net, but my buddy had a net, and it looked like heaven.
That's brutal, man. Those little dudes love me, and it's summertime in the South.
Yeah.
Would you say that... On a hot summer night, would you offer your neck? kicking it off here. 22, the avenue. It's the place where we are podcast. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
This is episode 22. Shout out to Iron Maiden, 22 Acacia Avenue. Jay, that has nothing to do with what we're doing today. What are we doing today?
Talking those hot summer nights. All of the albums have night or nights in the title, so these are some nights to remember.
Yeah, they're definitely nights to remember. That's one way to put them. This week was interesting, man. We're starting to get into territories where like everything is connected by the theme, but it's so just musically random.
Yeah, and it's getting tough, man. Picking out those themes each week, they're getting a little tough. I like the variety, but I also like when we do all one thing. So it's just
Yeah,
and I would say listening to at least one of these was definitely work for me. I had to work for it.
Yeah, you earned it this week.
Mm-hmm.
There was one, where I was like, don't scrub, don't scrub, don't scrub.
It's probably the same one as me. But maybe not. Could be this first one. Let's see. So the first album we're talking about this week is The Eagles, One of These Nights, which is the fourth studio album by The Eagles. It was released in 1975. I know you're not the biggest Eagles fan.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this?
Everyone knows how I feel about The Eagles, so I knocked this out first. But honestly, I didn't mind this one. It caught my ear a little bit. It was maybe like every other track, but I was like, oh, okay, I can see some things moving here. This is a little more fun for me.
I loved it for the most part, but yeah, there are definitely a couple misses for me. So do you know anything about this album in particular?
No. Is there something specific or special?
No, I mean, I was just curious. It's the last album with Bernie Leadon. You know, in researching this, he was replaced by Joe Walsh, for those who don't know.
Oh, okay.
I actually, we'll get into it, because there's one of the songs that is all him. And it's actually one of the songs that really contributed to him leaving the band. Like,
oh,
you know, Glenn Frey and Don Henley were kind of being dicks to him, but
oh Jesus,
we'll get to
not surprising and, but
well, here's the other part of that. I kind of agree with them, actually, and we'll talk about it, but okay. This was kind of their commercial breakthrough.
Oh wow. That, yeah, you, which is this their fourth?
Yeah,
fifth? This is number okay four. Okay, wow, that's a lot later than I was expecting.
Yeah, and the earlier ones are good albums. Okay. But this one's definitely, in my opinion, but this is the one that really was like worldwide international superstars. Diving in here, what any standouts in the early going here? One of These Nights is the leadoff track.
It's a perfect nighttime track, a little funky, kind of lurking some country disco.
Yeah, the bass and the guitar riff intro, just real kind of sexy bass.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
And good amount of disco, like you said, disco vibe on that, but it also kind of rocks a little bit. And I do dig Don Henley's voice. Another drummer, let the drummer sing.
Yeah, man, it's got like a really nice AM rock sound to it. Sometimes I'm a little wishy-washy on that, but this one worked.
It's got some cool stuff parts to it. I mean, it's funky, it's soulful, there's good guitar in it. No complaints, for sure. Did you happen to catch the lyrics at all?
No, I didn't.
It's a song about putting things off. So, one of these nights I'm going to do it. I'm going to get the girl. I'm going to get some money. I'm going to get a big house, that sort of thing. So one of these nights I'm going to do it. So that's what it's about.
Yeah, like you eventually got to do it sometime and kind of like facing your fears almost.
Yeah. In fact, Glenn Frey said, when that someday comes is up to each of us. So we're the ones decide that, which is cool. I mean, good message there. Track two, Too Many Hands. What'd you think of that bad boy? Because I really love that bass riff. I was hooked immediately.
I mean, there's a lot of shredding, and I thought it was actually kind of a cool song.
Rocked pretty hard. The bass line is awesome. I am going to learn how to play that bass line.
Who's the bassist with them again?
It's Randy Meisner is the bass player. He's also the lead vocalist on this track, and I thought he kicked ass.
Yeah.
I really dug this one. This was a strong contender for my song of the week, and I haven't really heard it too many times. So it's kind of a hidden, feel like it's a hidden gem on there.
Yeah.
Okay, so track four, this is the one that kind of contributed to the band kind of breaking up a little bit, cut to Bernie Leadon taking off. So Journey of the Sorcerer, instrumental.
It's long.
It's long. I friggin' dug it. It's got some banjo in there, kind of like a sci-fi bluegrass is what I would
describe dude,
it.
That like, yeah.
And this is the one. So Glenn Frey and Don Henley absolutely hated it. They did not want to include it on the album at all. Bernie Leadon was the main source of this. I believe he wrote the whole thing. And he got him to put it on there, and the resentment kind of led to them breaking up.
So I don't want to defend those two guys, but I'm with you. I can kind of see where they're coming from. Like,
it doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit at all. And in fact, my first note is, this is nothing like anything I've heard from them and maybe ever will. Again, knowing that he's not in the band. I really liked it, but it just, it did not fit in at all.
I loved it, but it did not fit in.
Yeah.
And so I actually talked to my dad about this because he's a big Eagles guy. And I was like, you know, what's the story here? And he's just like, yeah, we don't want that on our effing album. Like, it's kind of interesting.
I am so curious about what got left off, or maybe if they replaced it. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Even the name, Journey of the Sorcerer, it's so proggy and space bluegrass. Like, that's what it is.
And it's funny you say that, too, because it was used as the theme music for BBC Radio 4's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy radio series in 1978. So by itself, great track in this album. Doesn't fit at all.
No, yeah.
So that ends side A. Side B kicks off with Lion Eyes. I've always dug this song. Only somewhat recently really listened to the lyrics, and it made me like it even more. It's about a younger woman cheating on an older guy that she's just with for like the money and that sort of thing. You can't hide your lion eyes. I know you're
something
going to
we're
the
all
cheating
familiar
side
with.
Of town. Yeah, I never actually listened to it. So good harmonies in the chorus. It's a good little tune. Track 6, Take It to the Limit.
I like the message of it. I don't like the delivery, but I think the lyrics and the meaning are pretty strong. Yeah, just kind of like pushing yourself. And
it's exactly the message, you know, to keep trying, keep going. Yeah. You know, part of getting old is not being able to do as much as you could, but you can still do as much as you can.
It's so funny to me that they have songs like this that are so inspirational, while behind the scenes, I mean, they're just little shitbags to each other.
Yeah, in fact, this is another one that contributed to another member of the band leaving. Randy Meisner, he didn't feel comfortable singing it in public. Well, because he didn't think he could hit the high notes. And then Don Henley and Glenn Frey kind of forced him to do it.
Oh, man.
In concert. And crowds loved it. But he just really wasn't comfortable with it.
That's tough. Yeah, I wonder if it was one of those things where they're like, people love it, see? You're good, but yeah. You just can't clear that mental hurdle.
I think that's what it was. And that's what, in fact, one of them even said, you know, he could, in practice, hit it. But then when we got up on stage, just knowing that he had to hit it, sometimes he just didn't feel good about it. So.
Wow. So this is quite the transition album for them. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely love it. I understand you not enjoying the delivery, but I dig it. Do you have anything on either of the last two, After the Thrill Is Gone and Wish You Peace?
No, the last one to me is just so very, very singer-songwritery.
It's elevator music for sure.
Yeah.
So that one, Wish You Peace, that was written by Bernie Leadon and his then-girlfriend, Patty Davis, who was the daughter of then-Republican Governor of California, Ronald Reagan. So they wrote it together.
Oh, wow.
The rest of the Eagles absolutely hated it. So there, once again, is just kind of not a lot of harmony behind the scenes.
Now, this one, I will absolutely go to bat for the rest of the guys in the team. Be like, okay, I can see why you didn't like it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder if this is the only songwriting credit she ever got, or does she have other stuff out there?
Yeah, yeah.
She is credited with writing the song on the album, so.
That's nice. Yeah, at least they're nice enough to be like, well, it sucks, but.
It does suck. So, final thoughts on One of These Nights.
You know, honestly, I liked it a lot better than the last one we listened to. I wouldn't necessarily put it as a full like, but it had some really good moments.
Yeah, I mean, I like I've said before, I'm a big Eagles fan, but I actually tend to agree with your take on that. I would probably say I liked 6 of the 9 songs. I liked probably 7 of the 9 songs. I loved maybe 3 of them, but there were a couple that were just kind of like, just okay. I mean, it's just all right. Can't win them all. Second album for this week is going to be They Only Come Out at Night from the Edgar Winter Group. This is the third studio album from the, third studio album by Edgar Winter. But this is the first Edgar Winter Group album released under that title.
This was kind of like a super group or like a very handpicked. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So you got Ronnie Montrose in there and Rick Derringer as well, the guitarist on this bad boy. And then the drummer is actually a guy named Dan Hartman. He was a child prodigy. He was 21. He wasn't super old. He was 21 when they put this thing together, but he wrote a lot of the songs.
Man, that's pretty freaking impressive.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Like, because I don't know about you. I had a pretty, pretty good time with this one.
Did. Interesting. So I thought I would. And there were some standouts. Absolutely some standouts. But there are some I was just like, it's pretty generic 1970s. Rock.
There are two that come to mind immediately where I'm like, ew. But for the most part.
Yeah, I'm with you. And we'll see if they're the same ones here. So let's jump on in here. Track 1, Hanging Around. That's what set the tone for the album for me. And that was one of the ones that I was just like, this is kind of just generic rock music from the 70s.
I could hear that.
Did you like that one? Is that one of the standouts for you?
I did like it. It definitely wasn't that much of a standout, but it was a good southern boogie rocker, like some nice harmonies, nice little howl. Yeah, I didn't mind that one.
Track 2 is When It Comes. We've got a little bit of Edgar Winter on the saxophone there.
Oh, man.
Do you remember the other album we've talked about where Edgar Winter was on the sax?
Would it have been Meatloaf?
That is correct.
Oh, it was. Yep. Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I can pick up those vibes on this one. Yeah, that's why I mentioned it, because you can kind of pick that up.
Dude, yeah, they were scorching, man. Like, it's what I was looking for. Little sizzle, a little growl. That one was.
I'm with you. Track 3, Altamira. It's an interesting little track and maybe some hand drums, kind of an island vibe to it. For whatever reason, and I don't think it's that great of a song myself, but for whatever reason, I have a very, very clear memory of being a little kid, my dad playing this album, and song coming on. So for what, I don't know why that one stuck out to me, but it did.
It's pretty dang funny that you said you have memories of it as a kid, because my note is it sounds like if the Kinks wrote an 80s Disney song, like it was just 100%. It felt like it was supposed to be marketed towards children. Like it was weird to me, but I mean, it's such an earworm. Like I can see how that could just get stuck in a place and time in your brain.
It's funny, especially juxtaposed against like the next song. It's totally different. So track 4 is Free Ride, which probably one of a couple on here that people probably have heard before. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Rock Station, unmistakable intro on Free Ride. So this is one of the ones that the 21-year-old drummer wrote. He also did the lead vocals for it and played that opening guitar riff.
Man, my man was everywhere.
That's it. I love that tune, though. Great bass playing.
Yeah.
Ba-da-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Screaming guitar by Ronnie Montrose. There's like a bass and drum bridge in there with kind of some weirdo synth sounds going on, and then it just comes slamming in with the cowbell. Man, that song kicks total ass. I feel like it's a quintessential rock track, classic rock track. Yeah. Like, so track 5 though, Undercover Man. What'd you think of this one?
I'm not gonna lie, I loved it, dude.
You did? Interesting. Yeah. I liked it. I'm not gonna say I loved it, but I really liked it. It's like a little bit more of a heavy rocker. The part that turned me off is when they're just screaming Undercover Man at the song.
See, I love that. You like
that? Okay, all right.
It's got some strut and some burn to it. Like, those female vocals are pretty rad.
Those I did like, yes. Agreed.
Yeah, it's got a little bit of everything I dig, so I was really into it. It gets so loose and so wild at the end where it's like, Undercover Man. I was rocking out. I loved it. That's my song of the week.
Nice.
I can just imagine myself like seeing this live and like freaking out like a maniac. Man.
Under. That was good. All right. I'm coming around. Your enthusiasm has brought me around. Side B kicks off with Round and Round. I thought this might have been the original Rat tune. I thought, wait, was the Rat song a cover? But
no, God, that would have been awesome.
Wouldn't that have been amazing to discover that Round and Round was originally by Edgar Wintergroup?
Oh, my God. I'll tell you what, that would have completely changed my final grade on this, I think. You know what?
It's kind of a country track, though. The guitar in particular has kind of got a little twang to it. I had no idea that they had songs like that. I had no idea that Air Winter Group had songs like that. But number 9 is We All Had a Real Good Time.
It sounded like they were having one.
It's a track about partying, baby. I was really digging the attitude with which the lyrics are being delivered. Just a song about getting absolutely shithoused, not remembering what was happening the night before. I love and respect that. If you're going to go write a song about partying, you're going all out. But pretty great guitar and a funky bass line on that one, too.
Yeah.
And then finish it off here with track 10, Frankenstein. This is the other one that people probably have heard on radio or what have you.
Yeah, let's hear that most familiar part.
I love it too. I love that track. It's like that, you know, that may have been the first instrumental song that I ever heard in my life. Again, my dad played this album a ton, so it may have been the first actual, like, fully instrumental tune that I'd ever heard. Just a psycho rock. I mean, I love the rhythm section on that. The bass has some really fun parts, but there's also that main riff that it always comes back to. There's a kick-ass saxophone solo in there. It's just a beast of a tune.
I think it's an outstanding closer. Like, we've had a lot of instrumental closers recently, it feels like. It's hard, man. It's loud. Like you were saying, it's just rip-roaring.
I had the same note. It was a great finishing track. I really, yeah. really love Frankenstein. It is also on that Rocksmith game and super fun to play.
I bet, man.
So that's it for Edgar Winter Group. What are your final thoughts of this thing?
I enjoyed it. I don't know if I would say I like really enjoyed it, but I don't know. I had a good time.
Yeah, there was definitely some super standout tunes, obviously. If it's grabbing a song of the week from you and a couple others that I raved about, there are definitely some that I was just like, eh. But the standouts are really, really standout. I really dug the big ones.
I get that.
Number three here. We're cruising along today. Third album is going to be Nights Are Forever. It is the fourth album by the duo of England Dan and John Ford Coley. This was the breakthrough album. Did you know that? Or did you even know that England Dan and John Ford Coley existed?
I didn't know their name. I knew the one single off of this. I definitely didn't know they ever did anything that one would call breakthrough. That's for
this
sure.
This is the one, buddy. This is it. So, let's see here. I'm not 100% sure how I came to acquire this.
It's probably that sweet ass album cover.
Those dudes, they've got the what do they call those? The collared shirts with the like dovetail collars, like the huge collars on
like
them.
Enormously wide. Like...
Yes, and pointy. And then like a robin's egg blue suit coat, and then like is it a corduroy vest with like a corduroy jacket over the top? I don't know. It ain't good.
It just captures a moment in time so perfect. I love it, man. But when I saw that album cover, I was like, oh, Christ, I know what this is going to sound like. But, you know, that album cover.
It lived up to the expectations.
It lived down to them, yeah.
I'm guessing here that the first track is the one that you knew. Is that correct?
Yeah. And I don't know why I know this, yeah.
I'd really love to see you tonight.
And I'd really love to see you tonight. Oh, gives me the willies.
I'm telling you, dude. Let me just say, yeah, it feels kind of cheesy with the strings and the whatnot. But I feel like that chorus kind of hits. I'm not talking about moving in, and I don't want to change your life. But there's a warm wind blowing the stars around, and I'd really love to see you tonight. I think that's a solid lyric. Now, I have a question for you. I'd really, let's see. There's a warm wind blowing the stars around. Do you think he's talking about getting horned up? Is that what that is? Does that mean he's getting horned up?
I never thought about that, but oh, man. After looking at that album cover, my man was making those.
There's a warm wind blowing the stars around, and I'd really love to see you tonight.
Okay. Yeah, my man was definitely shooting stars.
I love it. I love this cover. I like that song, too. I'll defend it. Track two, I'll Stay. We got what I would describe as country disco funk going on here. And our first flute appearance of the week as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, buddy, you better believe we got those woodwinds.
A little funky. It's got
a very
rhythm.
Tame funk. Yeah.
Yeah, some strings, a little piano, and that sweet flute. Not much else to say about it. Let's keep cruising along here. Fellas, Westward Wind is track three. It's kind of island country.
By this point, this was 100% what I expected. It's so syrupy, but I'm like
very
you.
Syrupy.
I'm like you on that first track where I'm just kind of like nodding along, and I'm like, damn, I'm feeling this, though. Like, I don't know what the hell is wrong with me, because I was just...
You can't escape the hooks, man. They get you. You can't escape them. That one had a little kind of country electric guitar solo too. And I will just say that I love country electric guitar. I'm not saying that this was good country electric guitar on this song, but speaking in generalities, good country guitar playing is something that I enjoy a lot. Track four, Long Way Home. All right. So here's where you and I think both maybe are, at least I was on this tune. My notes for this song. What in the world? I do like this. I can't explain what it is, but I do like it, and I wish I was better at describing it. That's all I had for that song.
Dude, I was like, this is Ambrosia meets James Taylor.
Oh, shit.
And and I don't know, man. Like, maybe there's like subliminal messages in it. And then I started thinking, like, okay, this came out July 1976. Like, how many babies were born in April or May 1977?
Definitely one of those.
This is some soft rock loving here. It's ooey.
It is marshmallow soft. It is super soft. Track 5 is There'll Never Be Another For Me. I like it. It's got some horns. Yeah. It's funky. There you go.
That's where I was, man. I was like, damn, I actually love the horns in this. This is
some good old horns.
Dope. Yeah.
Another one kind of funky. All right, track 6, I believe, is another one that really got him some fame here.
Mm-hmm.
Nights Are Forever. At this point, I gotta say I'm trending up on this album because mm-hmm. I like this one too.
So first off, I think it's hilarious that their two hits were written by someone else.
Someone totally else. Yes, yeah, I saw that as well. Yeah.
And they're both about like pretty much the exact same thing, mm-hmm. but it's got good hooks mm-hmm. and it's got like most mild of shreds every now and then.
Same notes. I mean, big old massive choruses with a pretty good hook. I dug it. Let's keep rolling on though. Track 7, I have 0 notes. The song is It's Not the Same.
Yeah, there's a lot of walking and remembering on this album. Like, I feel like that appears a lot in the lyrics.
I'm trying to think about what I think about when I'm walking. It's usually not remembering things. Let's see. Track 8, Showboat Gambler. We got some banjo. We got a little bit of fiddle going on. But let me describe this. The first thoughts that came to my mind. This sounds like something you would hear in Branson, Missouri. And I mean that in the most insulting possible way. It's just, man, the guitar solo and the fiddle solo were pretty okay. The rest of it, get out of here. I don't believe that either of these gentlemen have ever showboat gambled or rambled in their entire lives.
This song cracked me up with how hokey it is. That's like the best way to put it. Like, I can close my eyes and see a Branson stage show putting this on. Man, that's perfect. God, that's perfect. Yeah, they're like the least intimidating. Like, could you imagine if these motherfuckers sat down at the poker table? They would either like hustle the hell out of everyone or be out in like 7 minutes.
I don't know which is which on the cover of this bad boy, but let me tell you this. Guy on the right maybe could figure out how to hustle you. Guy on the left is walking away with an empty wallet. I don't know if that's England Dan or John Ford Cooley, but he ain't winning any money.
Oh my God.
That's the best face he could come up with when they shot that album cover. You think he has a good poker face? No way. All right, so moving on from the Showboat Gambler, we got The Prisoner. What'd you think of The Prisoner?
Did you think this was political?
So here is what I got out of this. So on the album, the back album cover, it says The Prisoner. And then after The Prisoner, there's an asterisk. And if you go look at that, what it says is Baha'u'llah. Prophet found of the Baha'i faith.
Okay. Baha'i.
The album also has an inscription in the notes which says, for more information on the Baha'i faith, write to National Baha'i Information, 112 Linden Avenue, Willamette, Illinois, 60091.
Who are these guys?
Is one of them Baha'i? I'm wondering. I mean, that's so interesting to me because I've never heard a song about this faith.
Yeah.
It's a relatively new religion teaching the essential worth of all religions and the unity of all people. That sounds pretty damn good to me.
Yeah. The only thing I know about it is Rainn Wilson from The Office. I don't know why I know this. I've never seen The Office. He practices Baha'i.
Interesting.
So now I wonder maybe if like one of their leaders had gotten arrested or something, because the lyrics are like, social.
Very much so. And it's a kind of a totally different song too. It's got some cool vocal harmonies, the interesting acoustic guitar playing. Way better than Showboat Gambler, in my opinion.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a disservice to place this after Showboat Gambler.
Just to be honest, I have nothing to say on either of the last two tracks. For Lady, track 10, I was reading about the Baha'i faith. And for track 11, Everything's Gonna Be All Right, I just didn't care about it.
Everybody's Gonna Be All Right, or Everything's Gonna Be All Right. It's just a weird closer. It almost feels like it's trying to be a single, and then it just ends. I don't know. What do you think overall, though?
Another one that was kind of up and down for me. I will say there are parts of it that I definitely liked, but some of it I very much did not like. So Was this the one that I sent you a picture of the ratings of it? So the very reviews, divisive. Yes, the professional reviews for this bad boy. Allmusic.com. It got 4.5 stars.
Out of five.
Yeah. Yes. The Encyclopedia of Popular Music were walking in at 2 stars, and then the Rolling Stone album guy gave him 1 star out of this. So where do you fall on the let's do the more traditional 7-star scale? What are you giving this thing?
Like, I didn't like this, but fair. I kind of had a lot of fun, which is so weird to say and like feel. I'm plunking it, just for that emotional pendulum, I'm plunking it right at 3.5 out of 7. I'm taking the,
that's pretty generous. I mean, I was sitting maybe 3, but 3.5, I'm with you. I think we're in the same boat.
I'll tell you what, though, man.
As long as it's not the Showboat Gambler that we're in.
I think without that, I could probably pump it up to 4.
I think so, too.
I don't know, man. The next time I say JFC, just know that it stands for John Ford Coley.
And I'll picture this blue suit with a mustache. Hey, everyone. Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey, or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
So let's keep her trucking into the night. The, what is this, 4th album we're going to talk about today is Lost in the 50s Tonight. It is the 7th studio album by country music artist Ronnie Millsap. It was released in 1986 on RCA. What do you know about this thing?
I was completely unfamiliar with this album. I knew about Ronnie Millsap. To me, he kind of invented bad pop country. But I wanted to go in with an open mind. I was like, okay, maybe I'm missing something with Ronnie Millsap because he's so popular. But holy shit.
I think I was kind of approaching it the same way as you. I have never heard of Ronnie Millsap. I'm not even going to pretend that I knew he was anything. I mean, I think I've seen his name on like commercials when I was a little kid, like buy this Ronnie Millsap CD. You remember those commercials when they'd
advertise CDs? Yeah.
I just remember those. We don't have those anymore. That was awesome.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know what? Now that you say that, maybe that's where I remember that England Dan song from, was Time used to have an infomercial of like best songs from the 70s or something. I'm almost
somebody walking on the beach and they play that.
I can absolutely picture that. That's 100% where I heard it. Oh my God.
Those compilation CDs, like Monsters of Rock. And then the commercial was like, oh, cool.
Oh man, I wanted those so bad.
I did too. All right. We got a little off the track there, but that's okay because I don't have a whole hell of a lot to say about this album. So we've got, one thing I will say is this album was, this son of a bitch was huge for some reason.
Yeah.
It produced 4 different singles that hit number one. The album itself also hit number one. So it was a monster.
I don't get it. I don't. And like even the album cover, Hall of Fame terrible in my opinion.
It's one of the worst I've ever seen. Oh man, it's so terrible. And I only own this because it was back like when I was very, very first with my wife. And I was going to that record auction that I've talked about many, many times. And I was like, okay, what would you want? She was just like, I don't know, some country music. So she's like 80s country music. So I went over to the country tables and rifled through and just snagged a few. We got a couple more we'll talk about.
And one of them I think is actually pretty damn good, and I look forward to listening to that one. But, yeah, this one. I thought you were going to say you thought, like, you just saw Ronnie and thought it might have been Ronnie James Dio, and that would have been an amazing surprise.
Ronnie James Dio, Lost in the 50s Tonight. All right, let's talk about this son of a bitch. Title track, Lost in the 50s Tonight. This bad boy, in a year when 51 songs total hit the number one position on the Hot Country Singles chart, This one is the only one that spent 2 weeks there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It did win him a Grammy for Best Country Vocal Performance. But
holy Christ.
Let's see. Did I like anything about it here? I like the sax solo.
Mm.
He does have a decent voice. It's not a bad voice, but no, I was not on board. Track two, In Love.
I forgot. Are you familiar with the show Silk Stockings?
No, I don't remember Silk Stockings.
After Monday Night Raw, there was a show called Silk Stockings that was kind of like the first edgy cop show on TV, where it was like kind of sexy and like the cops had kind of an edge to them. But this song reminded me of the theme song to Silk Stockings and Miami Vice with like pop country elements.
It's funny you say that, because that's kind of, I didn't get to that point, but my note is very much that. I wrote that it sounds very much like it is from when it is. It just sounds super dated. I wouldn't say it was bad, though. It was not my thing. Track three, Old Fashioned Girl Like You. I guarantee this song was terrible, but I guarantee you this gets played at weddings to this day.
Yep. I can totally picture that. I can picture people in my hometown.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was thinking. Rural Kansas wedding. I could see this being played and people really getting out there and dancing to it. I mean, I saw a whiskey fountain at a wedding one time. It was like a whiskey waterfall. And you're just supposed to walk up there with your cup and just like dip it under the whiskey.
Holy Christ. How's that a good idea?
I bet they played this there. Anyway, that's all I have to say about that one. Let's see. Track four is a cover of Gladys Knight and the Pips. Heard It Through the Grapevine.
I think this is an abomination. Like,
I was just gonna let you speak first on that one. So
it's bad karaoke. I don't get it. I do not understand. And he's ranked like one of the best male country vocalists of all time. And I'm like, are there not that many?
Nobody's paying attention. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm with you. And it's funny too, because there's so many other versions of Heard It Through the Grapevine that this is still probably the worst one I've ever heard. Like, but there are so many other versions of it.
Yeah.
Creedence has one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's a bunch.
Yeah, the CCR one is like, ooh, guys.
Yeah, it's not too good either. Heard It Through the Grapevine.
Yeah. And it like rambles on for like 9 minutes or something. It's weak.
Let's keep rolling here. Actually, let's do this. This will be a little easier. Let's see. Any of the next 5 songs, do you have anything to say about any of them? That's going to be Don't Take It Tonight.
Yeah.
How Do I Turn You On? That one hit number one. Happy, Happy Birthday Baby.
That's a cover, I think. Yeah,
it is. Pretty terrible. Yep, of a 1957 song by the Toon Weavers, which when I saw that, Toon Weavers, that's a phenomenal name for a band. I'm in. I love it. The Toon Weavers.
I imagine that was like so hip and edgy back then.
The Toon Weavers.
Like 4 songs had the exact same music. Most of it sounds like waking up in a coffee commercial. Like, How Do I Turn You On? Like, to me, this whole album sounds horrifically dated. But, like, this one sounds like it was already 8 years late. And it's not, like, a fun throwback thing like Sha-Na-Na. It's weird to me.
I had the same notes. It's funny. I had the exact same notes. I said it sounds dated.
Electric
piano in there. It did have some flute. Another flute one for the week here. I'm sure there are people that like this. And if you like it, that's totally fine by me. Keep listening to Ronnie Millsap. But it ain't my thing. Track 10 is Money. That's What I Want. Another Motown cover.
It's very long. Bad.
Yeah. So on the whole, I was not a fan of this album. It was better than I thought it would be. I tried to go in with an open mind. I really did. I tried to, but let's
close it out strong though. We got two solid ones, I think.
We certainly do. Let's go. Number 5 here is Queen. A Night at the Opera. This is the 4th studio album from Queen. It was released November 21st, 1975 on EMI in the UK and Elektra Records in the United States.
Yeah, this is probably their most famous because of like how contentious it was in terms of getting it released and produced and like the fights with the record label. So,
dude, it was a pain in the ass. Yeah. So this was reportedly one of the most expensive albums ever recorded at the time. But it also was made when the band was absolutely broke. They had a bad deal with their label. They didn't really use any of the label studios to record any of this. They did eventually get some new management. They were so broke that Roger Taylor was told not to drum too hard because they couldn't afford new drumsticks.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So very, very interesting.
It's one of those things where you hear these stories and you're like, why was this so difficult to get made? Why was the record label fighting so hard? But then you listen to everything else that was coming out in 1975 and you're like, okay, this did not fit into what was on the radio. So it's kind of amazing.
Yeah, you blew my mind a little bit because I had never thought about that before, but you're 100% correct. It really is totally unique and new. Yeah. And it's incredible. And they did so many cool things with this when recording it. Multi-tracking, you know, where they're recording the same guy's voice a couple different times to create harmonies, using different tape tracks to do some like canon stuff, or like Freddie Mercury's kind of singing with himself on a couple of these. Really, really cool. Really, really amazing album. Let's see. So track one is Death on Two Legs. And this is the one, this song was written directly to a very specific person, Norman Sheffield, who was their former manager, who got them into that bad deal. And he actually ended up suing them over it. It opens with a little piano into some ominous spacey thing. And then these are your lyrics. You suck my blood like a leech. You break the law that you breach. Screw my brain till it hurts. You've taken all my money and you want more. So he's basically saying, hey, dick, you screwed us over and we cost us a bunch of money.
Yeah, they weren't messing around.
Yeah, in very cool song. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Freddie Mercury's voice is incredible. But the double track, the harmonies, are performed by the other guys in the band. So Brian May did him on this one. And it's him, you know, singing with himself. But it's playing together. You know, it's two different tracks of tape, basically. And it's literal tape at this time. They're cutting pieces of tape apart, gluing them together. It's incredible what they're able to do with the amount of technology they had, actually, at this time period. And then the only other thing I'd say about that one is just Brian May's guitar is so incredibly recognizable.
Dude.
Do you know anything about it? It's a very interesting guitar.
I don't, other than the fact that what it looks like, yeah.
So it's called the Red Special. And what it is it's actually a guitar that he designed and built with his dad when he was a teenager.
Oh, nice. Okay.
It's incredible. So they used a piece of the mantle for the neck of the guitar.
Oh, okay.
But it's,
do you know if it's like, if does it still exist, or did he make like copies, or?
I think he's had replicas built, but I do think that he still does have the original.
Damn.
But it's such a recognizable guitar style and tone that he is able to get. We got to keep moving though. Track two, Lazing on a Sunday Afternoon. The music to this one, you can do the voice, like the old timey, the girl's my baby, you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah, it's pretty dandy, it's pretty foppish.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get to, but
it has kind of, it's got kind of like a little Beatles vibe.
It does have a weird sound on the lead vocal, and that was created when the lead vocal was sung in the studio and then reproduced through headphones in a tin bucket. With a recording device in it. So, so it gives it kind of like a hollow megaphone sound. And I think they actually recorded the guitar solo in the same way on this. At least it sounds like it.
Jeez.
Kind of a tinny phaser quality to it. That's a quick little short song. It's really cool too because it goes right into I'm in Love with My Car, which is a really great, passionate love song about a car. That is literally what it is, and I love it. This is my song of the week. I love I'm in Love with My Car.
I think this sounds like a slightly slowed down, almost 80s hair metal song. Like, they pretty much,
I can see that.
Like, they were making a hair metal song, like, but a really, really good one. Not like the standard when you think of hair metal, like a freaking awesome one where 100 bands heard it and were like, I'm going to try that.
Definitely has some epic high-flying guitar tones in it. And the dude really loves to shoot out of that car. lead vocal on that one is Roger Taylor, actually. He's doing the lead vocals on that thing. And I One thing I did like about this album, just having, you know, looked at all of the notes and stuff, is they do trade off singing quite a bit, which is surprising considering Freddie Mercury's the lead singer.
That surprised me the most, I think, when I was looking through and reading about this.
Track 4, You're My Best Friend. This was the first Queen single to be written by John Deacon.
Okay.
He wrote this while he was learning to play the electric piano.
Oh, nice.
But I love that tune. Absolutely love it.
It's got nice structure. It's got nice messaging. Like, it's a sweet song.
He wrote it for his wife, which I'm a sentimental guy. I like things like that. So, and John Deacon, but for those of you who don't know, yes, he played the electric piano on this. He's the bass player for Queen. Let's see. Track 5, 39. This was certainly a unique tune.
This is one where Brian May sings on, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Super catchy, jaunty. It's got like a folksy skiffle to it, about space travel, like kind of hard to not love it. It's pretty awesome.
Slightly less fascinating, but kind of a fun fact here. Freddie Mercury jokingly told John Deacon to learn how to play the double bass for this song. And then he just showed up in the studio one day and was able to play, taught himself to do it. And there you go.
I wonder if when he showed up with that, somebody was like, who wants to tell him that was a joke?
I thought it was funny, but they're giving each other shit like that. Hey, you should learn to play the double bass for this. Oh, okay. Yeah. He shows up and he can do it. Let's see. Track 8, The Prophet Song. This one was written by Brian May about the great biblical flood after he had a dream about it when he was recovering from an illness. So, really, kind of sounds like a two really big operatic sounding tune. Kind of heavy and dark as well. Definitely a prog kind of track. This is the one that had multi-tracks of Freddie singing with himself.
Okay.
Now I know. Really heavy. Good tune.
Yeah, Sludgy Grizzly.
Yeah. Track 9, Love of My Life. Very lovely piano track. And Freddie's voice is incredible, as always. Mm-hmm. I haven't talked about that much, honestly, but his voice is incredible. And people should know that.
You know, I think that's the first mention.
I know. It's. Let's see. Track 11, Bohemian Rhapsody. That's just like I said earlier, the quintessential rock track. That's like, it is amazing.
Yeah, I was thinking that it would be hilarious if we just like talk shit about this
just
track.
Bagged on it the whole time. This thing, just god awful. There's no flow to it. It's got a whole bunch of different parts.
Yeah. What kind of psycho put this on an album? God knows I can't add anything that's been spoken of in the discourse of it. The Muppets version is pretty rad.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we close out Hand Over Hearts.
God Save the Queen. Literally, God Save the Queen, as interpreted by Brian May. So, it's one of the biggest rock albums of all time. What else do you want to say about it?
You know, it's funny. I wouldn't say it necessarily blends together really well because there's so many different styles. But at the same time, like, that makes Queen who they are. And it's got something for every... Like, it's just a masterclass of talent and engineering.
I love all the different experimentation, the different ideas that they're coming up with. Yeah. Some of these... It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
The talent and the genius to be able to come up with that kind of stuff.
Totally.
All right, let's finish it up this week. Number 6 is kind of an outlier in my collection.
Yeah.
For sure. That doesn't mean it's bad, but it definitely doesn't fit in with a lot of what I have. So this is The Shins. The album is Wincing the Night Away. This is the third studio album by The Shins. Came out January 23rd, 2007 on Sub Pop Records. Are you familiar with The Shins at all?
Oh, yeah. These dudes really pushed the aughts wave of new indie. So I was really excited to revisit this. I really like their predecessors quite a bit.
I can picture, by the way. I mean, I'm in college at this time, trying to keep up with the newest indie rock bands at that time. So I'm big into The Shins.
Is that when you got this?
I've had this a long time. Yeah, that's a fair question. I actually don't know where this came from.
Okay.
It's one of the only albums in my collection that I have no idea where it came from, but I can say with a lot of confidence that I've had it since I actually had a record player.
Okay. I'm kind of curious.
Cover.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's got sort of a Seussian sort of orbs floating around with like Dr. Seuss trees and stuff.
Yeah, like everything. I don't know. They put everything into what they were making. I thought like they were a whole package. It was nice. I mean, they still are. They still make music.
So let's jump on in. This I've definitely listened to this album cover to cover a ton in my life. So let's kick it off with Sleeping Lessons, track one.
I love how the track builds, kind of eventually overpowers the listener with like some distorted guitar, jangly dance rhythms. I think it's a really nice mood setter for this album.
It does certainly pick up the pace about halfway through, and it does build to that as well. So I'm with you totally. It's a great tune. It's a reference to James Mercer's Insomnia.
Mm. Okay.
So Sleeping Lessons.
Okay.
Track two is Australia.
Shout out to my Australian buds out there.
Good day. I don't think Australia is ever referenced in any way. Yeah.
I was going to say, I don't think this has anything to do with Australia.
No, I think it's just a name choice.
I like the upbeatness. I think Mercer's voice sounds so snappy and engaging and throughout this whole album. Like, he has a great voice, like a very unique, specific indie style voice. Yeah. Great tune.
Absolutely. It's got some great guitar solos, but you're right. His voice really just snags you. It's a peppy tune. I think there's a little banjo mixed in there. I feel like there was a lot of banjo going around at this time
period, yeah.
the mid-aughts. I think people were putting banjo and stuff, but maybe
they really were. Oh my God, yeah. Like the 70s had the flute, the aughts had the banjo.
It was the flavor of the week.
Totally.
Track four, Phantom Limb. I love that one. Always have. I can picture the music video to that. Can you remember the music video for that? That's another thing that's gone by the wayside is music videos, but can you picture that
one? Yeah. Earlier, I was going to say, I wonder if we have similar or adjacent memories, because this was a staple on an indie show that came on just like really balls-ass late on MTV2 on like Saturday, maybe Sunday nights. I just found this so wildly engaging.
I could just picture the music video in my head. Mm-hmm. Like, it's historical. I think there's references to like Joan of Arc and Aztecs and Donner Party and all that. It's all being played by kids and then members of the band.
Yeah, almost like community theater. Almost.
Yes, but great tune. I love that song.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful song. Yeah, young love and just kind of the desire to be oneself and break away from small-mindedness. Like, I have never been in this situation. I mean, it makes me think of just like some of the LGBTQ community I knew growing up and like them coming out and my friends who had luckily really positive experiences. But then like thinking of those who didn't and just, I mean, how freaking rough that could be. And like this song kind of trying to power them through. Yeah, I think it's beautiful.
Absolutely. That's exactly. I have nothing else to say. You're exactly right. It's a beautiful song. Just kind of overcoming some of the looks you get in a shitty small town somewhere. I mean,
yeah.
And I've never been in that position, but I can try and understand it. Red Rabbits is track six.
What'd you think of that?
I love it. I don't know what it almost sounds like steel drums, but I think it's a lap steel guitar.
Okay.
Like that kind of almost island sort of vibe to it, but like all kinds of different percussion elements. They got the shakers and kind of little scratch sounds, but really another one where they're bringing in different instruments. I love the incorporation of the violin in the strings in that one. Really, really cool.
First time Chris Funk from the Decemberists shows up on the album. So pretty nice. Famous friends in.
Oh, absolutely. As many as you can find.
Yeah.
Track seven is Turn On Me. What do you think of that one? It reminded me of a very specific song, and I have no idea why, but go ahead. A different song entirely.
Okay.
What'd you think of that?
It feels like a warm autumn day that like just gets sunnier, and man, like I really, really liked it. This might be my favorite track on the album.
For whatever reason, like you said, getting brighter and brighter. I have no idea why, but it reminded me of the Foo Fighters song "Big Me." You ever seen that music video? They're like all smiles and having a good time.
Yeah.
I don't know why it reminded me of that, but it did.
Do you have anything on the last two? I don't have too much.
A Comet Appears is track 11. Girl Sailor's track 10. A Comet Appears, that it's another one where they're bringing in a fair amount of different instruments, which that's always going to get me.
Yeah.
The lyric, "Let's carve my aging face off, fetch us a knife, start with my eyes, down so the lines form a grimacing smile." I was like, what the hell? And it's such a pleasant sounding song, but those are the lyrics. That's the last track on the album. On the whole, what'd you think of it?
A lot of music can transport me. some bands just like really put me in specific places and moments and emotions and memories. And this is one of those times. Like, it touched me.
Yeah, me too. I know for a fact, 100% fact, I had a burned CD of this that I used to listen to. But yeah, absolutely took me right back to, I don't know how old I was, 22, 23 years old, listen to The Shins, just fresh out of college.
Yeah.
So completely, I'm with you there. Any final thoughts on our night?
No, it was very varied. Some stuff that I hope to never hear again, and some stuff that I just had a grand old time listening to and rediscovering and getting back into. So
I'm definitely feeling the same way. And coming into our conversation, actually, I was thinking, well, this might have been one of my least favorite weeks. Mm-hmm. But I think that's being really weighed down by a couple albums. On the whole, it was actually good. I enjoyed it. I just didn't, there, I had to kind of fight my way through one of them. But
England Dan, good... John Ford, you keep doing your thing, fellas.
Hey, there were some high highs on that album. I'm willing to admit that. Some real low lows, though. Don't be Rambo Showboat Gamblers anytime soon. All right, so didn't see that coming question this week. You got one locked and loaded? Or
yeah, I've got one.
You want me to shoot first?
I can fire it off.
Let's go.
So I'm a big fan of the nighttime. I'm sort of a night owl. I love late nights on the weekends. This, of course, makes me think of sleepovers. Ooh. So let's say you're 10 years old, because that's kind of when we start phasing out of sleepovers. What's a sleepover at Jay's house like? What are you playing, watching, listening to, getting into? What are you doing?
I'll tell you, man, we didn't do many sleepovers at my house.
Okay.
I was going places. I like to go different places. We did occasionally do it.
And
it
what were your friends' sleepovers like then?
Yeah, let's see. We're probably playing like, and here's why I was going places. I didn't have the really cool video game systems all the time. And my buddies were like, so we're playing like Primal Rage. Or one of those, you know, Street Fighter, something like that. And we're staying up all night drinking like the store brand pops, like just crushing those all night long.
Oh, yeah. There's like odd doctor.
Yeah,
the like blanks.
Smashing a few Dr. Thunders, playing a little Primal Rage. Just maybe like, I don't know, burning G.I. Joes with a lighter or something. I don't know what else we were doing, but really, really juvenile, ridiculous thing.
Yeah, I like it.
And then I'm probably falling asleep on the floor with like no blanket, and I'm cold, and I don't want to bother anybody. But I'm
yeah,
cold.
Sure. Just like curled up.
Yeah.
Like too proud.
Covering myself up with like a rug or something that I found on. So that's it. That's what I think of when I think of sleepovers.
Stretching your t-shirt down, and then you go home and your mom's like, what happened?
Yep, that's it. Man. We're probably watching like, I'm trying to think. I mean, Bloodsport. I'm sure we've watched Bloodsport a few times in sleepovers. We got Jean-Claude Van Damme fighting in the Kumite. I'm sure I've seen Total Recall at a sleepover, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Terminator 2. I've probably seen Terminator 2 a whole bunch of times.
That's incredible.
All right, so here we go. We're talking about the nighttime. And as we all know, vampires can only go out at night. As we've seen from the films Blade and The Matrix, the music that goes for vampires is electronic. A lot of blast beats and things, so I got to thinking, you know, music, animals. So what I have here is a list of nocturnal animals and a list of stoner metal or stoner metal adjacent band names.
Okay.
I'm going to read them to you and you're going to tell me if it is a stoner metal band or if it is a nocturnal animal. So whenever you're ready, I've got a handful of them here for you. So we're going to kick it off with Binturong. Is that a stoner metal band or is that a nocturnal animal?
I know that's an animal.
That is correct.
Okay.
All right. So number two here, Goat Snake.
Goat Snake. I'm going to guess band.
That's correct. Goat Snake is stoner metal band.
Okay.
Pelican. Stoner metal or stoner metal adjacent?
That's a stoner metal band, I believe.
Yeah, like a post-metal band.
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. Kind of like Isis. Yeah.
Correct. Slender Loris.
Slender Loris. I could see that being like a Norwegian black metal band. So, or I'm going to go with, black metal or stoner metal band.
That's incorrect. The Slender Loris is a little marmoset looking thing from Sri Lanka.
I'm gonna look this thing up.
Yeah, he ain't real pretty. All right, I got a couple more. Let's see. Freedom Hawk.
It sounds too on the nose to be a stoner metal band. It also sounds very on the nose to be like an American Western animal. I feel like neither of these work. I'm gonna go with Animal.
That's a stoner metal band.
Damn. Okay.
All right, I got three more if you got it in ya.
Yeah.
Great Gray Slug.
Gray Slug. Man, these are getting much harder. I'm gonna go with Animal.
That's correct. Oh, I don't see what's so great about it.
All right.
Let's see.
I'm gonna look this up. Great Gray Slug. I gotta know. Looks like a slug.
Red cucumber. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Two more. Kinkajou.
This sounds like a band, I think, but I've definitely never heard them.
It's another kind of forest mammal, so.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. Yes. It's known as the honey bear in some places.
That thing's adorable.
It is, absolutely.
Kinkajou sounds like a...
Does.
Japanese metal band, yeah.
All right, here's the last one. Stoned Jesus. Is that an animal or is that a stoner metal band?
I really hope it's an animal because I want to see the picture of this.
It's absolutely not an animal.
Damn it. Okay. I was picturing like, I don't know, some kind of like gangly little creature with just kind of like buggy dead eyes.
And that's all I had for you this week for my special question.
All right. That was pretty dang fun. Did this make your night? Did we put you to sleep? Don't care either way. Subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JNJoyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. And as always, be good to each other.
Good night.
Tonight, there's only us tonight. Doo-doo.